Wie beeinflusst dich das? In diesem Land gay zu sein bedeutet, ein schweres Leben zu haben. Manchmal kann man den emotionalen Ballast nicht allein handeln. In dem Moment, in dem du beschließt, dein Leben zu leben, wie du es möchtest, beginnt der Kampf. Würdest du kurz über deinen Gerichtsprozess sprechen? Du hast ganz einfach kein Recht zu sprechen. Wenn du sprichst, ist da keine Kraft in deinen Worten. In den Augen der Jury bist du kriminell, eine Mörderin oder ein Monster. Du wirst als unehrenhafte Person verurteilt. Das lassen sie dich mit allem, was sie tun, spüren. Obwohl es keine rechtliche Grundlage gibt, dich zu verurteilen, tun dies die RichterInnen doch, wenn die der Inhaftierte trans ist. In meinem Fall, ich bin als kriminell angeklagt, obwohl ich nicht in den Fall verwickelt war. Das Gericht beschuldigt mich, weil sie behaupten, dass ich in der kriminellen Szene war. Dafür gibt es jedoch keine Beweise. Einige Leute haben falsche ZeugInnen-Aussagen gemacht und plötzlich wurde ich zur Kriminellen. Ich verbringe mein Leben im Knast für ein Verbrechen, welches ich nicht begangen habe. Sie haben mich in den Knast gesteckt, weil ich eine Transfrau bin. Es gibt eine Menge Einschränkungen. Könntest du über die Schwierigkeiten erzählen, die du bisher im Knast durchmachen musstest? Die gesellschaftlichen Mechanismen funktionieren genauso wie draußen. Inhaftierte sind beleidigender, verbaler Gewalt, degradierenden Umgangsformen und sexualisierter Gewalt ausgesetzt. Ich war das Ziel eines sexualisierten Übergriffs durch einen Wachmann und er griff mich an. Ich legte offizielle Beschwerde ein, ich gab ihm Sperma und andere Beweise. Der Wachmann kam für ein Jahr in den Knast, wahrscheinlich untersuchungshaft. Als der strafrechtliche Verfolgungsprozess zu Ende war, lautete das offizielle Urteil, die Vergewaltigung geschah konsensuell. Sie schenkten meinen medizinischen Befund, der bewies, dass ich körperlich angegriffen wurde, keine Beachtung. Der Wachmann wurde freigelassen und bekam sogar den gleichen Job zurück. Hier gibt es keine Gerechtigkeit. Wie kann ein Gericht entscheiden, so einer Person den Job zurückzugeben? Das Gericht hat keine Einsprüche, weil sie finden, dass eine queere Person auf diese Weise bestraft werden soll. Wir sollen wie Kriminelle behandelt werden. Ich bin seit 11 Jahren im Knast und seit 9 Jahren in Einzelhaft. Der Knast beantragt rechtliche Einschränkungen aufgrund meiner Strafe. Weil ich nicht cisgender bin, habe ich jedoch nicht die gleichen Rechte wie eine cis-Inhaftierte mit lebenslanger Freiheitsstrafe. Ich habe keinerlei soziale Beziehungen. Ich kann nicht einmal in die Bücherei gehen. Normalerweise ist es Inhaftierten erlaubt, das Telefon jede Woche für eine Stunde zu benutzen. Wegen meiner Gender-Identität lässt mich der Knast nicht. Ich darf nicht ins Fitnessstudio gehen. Sie sagen, du bist allein, was würdest du dort ganz allein tun? Das Wachpersonal lässt mich nur 1 bis 2 Stunden auf den Knasthof. Ich bin dort alleine, laufe auf dem Betonboden und komme zurück. Ich verbringe 22 bis 23 Stunden meines Tages in einer 10 Quadratmeter Zelle. Ich habe sehr begrenzten Raum, um mich zu bewegen. Ich kann nicht alles in Briefe schreiben. Sie beschränken das. Das ist ein Knast. Dort gibt es keine Familie, keine BesucherInnen, kein Geld. Ich habe niemanden. Um hier zu überleben, brauchst du Geld. Entsprechend meiner Verurteilung werde ich hier den Rest meines Lebens verbringen. Ich weiß nicht, wie viel ich noch aushalten kann unter diesen Bedingungen. Wenn du im Knast allein und gebrochen bist, bist du nichts. Alle denken, im Knast ist alles leichter, aber so funktioniert das nicht. Du musst für den Strom zahlen. Wenn du nicht zahlst, schalten sie ihn dir aus. Tee, Kaffee, Zucker, Seife, Reinigungsmittel, Shampoo. Was auch immer du willst, sie stellen es dir in Rechnung. Bitte versteh mich nicht falsch, ich meine lebensnotwendige Dinge. Die Dinge, die hier im Kiosk verkauft werden, sind sehr limitiert und doppelt so teuer wie draußen. Niemand hilft dir im Knast. Ich mache Perlenhandarbeit, um mir selbst ein Einkommen zu organisieren. Wenn ich wen finde, um die Handarbeit zu verkaufen, offensichtlich ist es generell schwer, Dinge zu verkaufen, kann ich 6 Lira pro Tag, ca. 67 Cent, verdienen. Das wären dann 180 Lira, ca. 20 Euro, insgesamt im Monat. Ich bin froh, wenn ich es schaffe, 80 Lira, ca. 9 Euro zu verdienen. Ich kann keine Kleidung kaufen, weil ich keine Unterstützung habe. Ich kann meine speziellen Bedürfnisse nicht befriedigen, weil ich kein Geld habe. Ich möchte, dass Menschen meinen dringenden Aufruf hören. Möchtest du etwas über die Probleme erzählen, die du mit der Knastverwaltung hast, die der Anlass für dieses Interview war? Wie wurdest du behandelt? Obwohl ich viele Probleme habe, bestehe ich darauf, mich gegen die Verstöße meiner Rechte zur Wehr zu setzen. Ich kann nicht ins Detail gehen, aber ich versuche mein Bestes. Im letzten Knast, in dem ich inhaftiert war, durfte ich weder die Leitung noch eine Psychologin sehen. Ich kann nicht zum Wachpersonal gehen, wenn ich mich krank fühle. Entscheidungen sind sehr willkürlich. Ich habe schon vergessen, wie es war, eine soziale Person zu sein. Wenn ich einen Brief schreibe, behalten sie ihn mindestens 5 Tage, manchmal 10 Tage. Dann schicken sie ihn ab. Es kommt kein Licht durch mein Zellenfenster. Die Knastleitung schaltet die Heizung nur für ein paar Stunden an. Das ist nicht genug, um den Ort zu wärmen. Ich habe dem Ministerium für Justiz Beschwerdebriefe geschrieben, aber die Leitung hat Falschaussagen über mich gemacht. Denkst du, die Staatsanwaltschaft oder das Ministerium würden einer Transperson glauben? Sie glauben natürlich nur, was das Wachpersonal sagt. Ich habe um Verlegung gebeten und die Gründe erklärt und wurde nicht verlegt, weil das Wachpersonal sagte, mit mir sei alles okay. Ich trat in den Hungerstreik, was an der Situation auch nichts änderte. Ein Wachmann bedrohte mich, indem er sagte, ich werde dich nicht aus diesem Knast rauskommen lassen, bis du hier stirbst. Er tut das, weil er ein Freund von dem Wächter ist, der mich vergewaltigte. Das hat er mir gegenüber zugegeben. Wenn ich endlich die Möglichkeit bekomme, die Leitung zu sehen, bedroht und beleidigt dieser mich. Er schmeißt mich hochkantig aus seinem Zimmer raus. Obwohl ich verschlossene Briefumschläge an offizielle Institutionen verschicke, adressieren sie meinen Brief an das Büro der Bundesanwaltschaft. Das ist vor 2 Wochen passiert. Sie haben meinen Brief nie versandt. Ich war so am Ende, dass ich versuchte, mir das Leben zu nehmen. Ich habe eine Flasche Pillen getrunken und sie haben mich ins Krankenhaus gebracht. Sie haben mir den Magen ausgepumpt. Mit der Hilfe der Knastpsychologin war es mir möglich, einen der Polizisten zu überzeugen, ein Statement zu schreiben. Und ich legte eine rechtliche Beschwerde gegen die Leitung ein. Bisher, obwohl sie das rechtliche Mittel erhalten haben, schieben sie sich gegenseitig die Verantwortung zu. Ich, nur ich allein, ohne irgendwen, bin ich, nur eine Transperson. Niemand würde sich um meinen Körper kümmern, wenn ich sterbe. In diesem Knast habe ich bewiesen, dass ein Wachmann gelogen hat, und ich hatte Beweise. Du lügst, du bist ein Lügner, und hier ist der Beweis, habe ich gesagt. Sie haben mich wegen Beleidigung eines Wachmanns geladen, was zu einer Disziplinarstrafe von 2 Monaten führte. Nun beleidigt mich die Leitung mit unsäglichen Dingen, aber alle schweigen. Gibt es noch etwas, das du gerne hinzufügen möchtest? Ich bin verzweifelt auf der Suche nach Gerechtigkeit. Ich möchte dich fragen, ob du auch weiter schweigen und meiner und der Situation anderer queerer Inhaftierter zusehen wirst, oder wirst du Nein zur Unterdrückung sagen? Ihr könnt extra Briefe schreiben, auf unserem Blog haben wir die Adresse aufgeschrieben.
Kompliza. Feminist Prison Radio at 7 p.m. on Monday.
Contact us. E-Mail kompliza@immerda.ch. Post address Radio Lora, Militärstraße 85A, 8004 Zürich. WhatsApp 0041-77995-9715.
Complizza, rompiendo los muros de insolación.
Y la campaña, yo puedo ser cualquiera de todas, depende de cómo tú me apodas, pero no voy a ser la que obedece, porque mi cuerpo me pertenece. Yo decido de mi tiempo, cómo quiero y dónde quiero. Independiente yo nací, independiente decidí. Yo no camino detrás de ti, yo camino de la para ti.
Tú no me vas a humillar, tú no me vas a gritar, tú no me vas a someter, tú no me vas a golpear, tú no me vas a denigrar, tú no me vas a obligar. Silenciar, tú no me vas a callar. No sumisa ni obediente, mujer fuerte, insurgente, independiente y valiente. Romper la cadena de lo indiferente. No pasiva ni oprimida, mujer linda que das vida. Emancipada en autonomía, antipatriarca y alegría.
Ser protagonista de nuestra historia y la que agita a la gente, la comunidad, la que despierta la vecindad, la que organiza la economía de su casa, de su familia.
A golpear, tú no me vas a denigrar, tú no me vas a obligar, tú no me vas a silenciar, tú no me vas a callar.
No sumisa ni obediente, mujer fuerte, insurgente, independiente y valiente. Romper la cadena de lo indiferente, no pasiva ni oprimida, mujer linda que das vida, emancipada en autonomía, antipatriarca y alegría.
Jetzt hört ihr von dem Soli-Bündnis Freedom for Esra noch einiges über Esras Situation und die Situation von trans- und nicht-binären Personen in der Türkei.
What does Esra Arıkan Solidarity Network do? So I think we have been friends with Esra for 4.5 years. And as a network, we provide her whatever she needs. Sometimes we write letters, sometimes we translate other people's letters. Sometimes we support her financially because her family doesn't support her. And it's really difficult if you're trans and if you're in prison because you're not allowed to work in workshops, so that you cannot earn any money to support yourself. So these are the things that we have been doing for almost 4.5 years. We came up with her story on an anarchist newspaper, and then we connected her, and we started sending each other letters. Then we understood that she needed some sort of solidarity. From that point, we started to build a network. And this is like a small group of people, but everybody is welcome. This is an open initiative, autonomous initiative. So we started to talk to her, send letters to her, and she started to open up herself, and she started to talk about what she needs, and then the rest followed.
Prison abolition and anti-prison work isn't something that centers the state's determination of guilt and the state's criminal system. So it doesn't center what somebody was, according to the state, put in prison for. And Esra Arıkan is one of the people which doesn't center her own legal case in her efforts against the prison system, and as such doesn't want other people centering the state's crime, because this distracts from the broader state violence of the prison system. So to talk about crimes particularly distracts from what the prison system does to all prisoners and to trans and non-binary prisoners, regardless of what their allegations are against them. So part of prison abolition work and anti-prison work is recognizing the entire prison industrial complex as this systemic violence against people, and therefore the narratives that raise and rise up out of those kind of understandings of state violence, of course, don't repeat the state's narratives where crime and criminality is the center of the conversation and people are, you know, encouraged to be judgmental towards the so-called criminal. The person, instead, in an abolitionist framework, is understood to be a person that violence is being done to and is not there for condemnation. A conversation which includes transformative justice and community efforts towards making life between us and relationships between us possible to continue after potential violences occur between us is somewhere where really good faith conversations and meaningful conversations can happen about what it means to deal with the things that we do to each other. But under a carceral system, a punitive, violent injustice system, we don't take the state's word for constructing narratives about people and their positions. Instead, we look at the violence has done to them. And Esra Arıkan is very much one of the people who advocates for this approach for herself. Esra Arıkan doesn't want it centered. The state's reasoning, the state's allegations against Esra are not something that Esra wants to set the tone of a narrative about her situation. Instead, the prison is doing its violence against her as a trans and non-binary person, not because of any unique situation in Esra's life, but because that violence is going to happen to any trans and non-binary person that enters into that system, regardless of the state's reasoning. So I think it's important for us to recognize that for those people who engage with this conversation with a curiosity about what is the alleged crime and what were the charges brought against any individual within this system, that we need to take a step back from that question and recognize that regardless of why somebody ends up trapped inside of this system, that the system is designed to do violence against people. And that's never a way that we want to deal with any kind of situations between us. We don't defer to the state to do its violence against other people, because the state has a monopoly on violence and we don't support that.
When she had her surgery, because she had to have the bottom surgery in order to be transferred into a women's prison, according to Turkish system, you need to have pink identity, which is surprise woman, and you have to have blue identity if you identify yourself as a man. They don't care about your gender expression. They need to have the legal document proving that you're somebody. And then she needed to have the bottom surgery. When she had the surgery, everything was going smoothly and she was transferred into a woman's prison and she was happy. But then there was a complication. There was a post-op complication. So she wanted to visit her surgeon again, but the prison administration chief said, no, you cannot go. But there wasn't any reason why they were ignoring her. Why didn't they let her to simply go and visit her surgeon? There was no explanation. This was a really funny story, actually. She wrote me a letter and she like said in a covert way, she said, I will go on a hunger strike. Don't be so nervous. But I will do this because I have to visit my surgeon. Before, when she had her breast implants, she had some complication and they had to remove her implants, which made her feel really dysphoric. So she needed to make sure that this time she doesn't get infected, and she needed to make sure that she gets the proper attention she deserves. So she went on a hunger strike, but then the prison administration ship said, yes, you can go and visit your surgeon, and she stopped.
During the 4 and more years that we've been connected with Esra Arıkan and finding our way to be in solidarity, we've also been learning about the situation of prison and prisoners, but more specifically about trans people and non-binary people within the prison system. Trans and non-binary people have quite unique experiences of prison. There is some information about this, particularly from people reporting on their own lives inside the prison industrial complex, but it is an effort to try to piece together this information. So we've reached out, spoken and organized with other people doing similar work to us in other reasons. We've read and listened to different testimonies from people within the prison industrial complex, and some key themes emerge. It becomes apparent that trans and non-binary prisoners are targeted with particular kinds of violence. One dominant theme concerns the structure of the prison system itself. It becomes clear that prison is not a gender-neutral system. It's not a system that merely is responsive to existing social divisions. As we know, the inherent racisms of prisons are well documented, but the prison system's very active and deliberate role in dividing people along an imaginary gender binary is intentionally part of the social structuring of the gender binary as an ideological concept, as a norm. The prison exists as a structure which separates people amongst boys, girls, men and women. So it is not a thing that after the fact tries to, as best as they can, deal with the existence of trans and non-binary people, which is how they try to present it when they pretend to find solutions for our existence. The very reality of a setup like that is built on dividing people along these imaginary lines, at recreating ideas and experiences that are gendered. So their solution for our existence is that trans and non-binary people are placed into solitary confinement. Esra's experience of this was more than 13 years in solitary confinement. That is something unimaginable to do to someone. And worse still, they claim that they do this for our own safety. Solitary confinement is not something that comes from a judge's decision. It has nothing to do with their case. It is punishment for being trans, punishment for being non-binary, punishment for being gender non-conforming. This is part of the standardized punishment for gender non-conforming people in the carceral system. This is something that prison authorities decide for themselves while claiming it is in the interest of the safety of the prisoner. However, another theme emerges from the testimonies of trans and non-binary prisoners, a theme of targeted abuse, harassment and assault by prison guards and authorities. This legacy of targeted violence exposes their lie of safeguarding. It is worth noting that the lie of safeguarding prisoners by placing them against their will in solitary confinement is not a tactic only used against trans and non-binary prisoners. It is used against disabled and neuroatypical prisoners, against black, brown and indigenous prisoners in settler colonial regions, against Kurdish prisoners, against radicals, anarchists, socialists and so-called political prisoners, against religious minorities and queer prisoners in general. However, different from other prisoners targeted for the safeguarding of solitary confinement, the very reality of the binary prison prepares the groundwork for the myth of protection of trans and non-binary prisoners. This myth of safety allowed for Esra to be raped more easily. Solitary confinement, with its cover story of safety, claiming to protect her from other prisoners, is exactly what gave a prison guard opportunity to rape her. The state says that trans and non-binary prisoners are in solitary confinement, so they won't experience the gendered violence from prisoners. But the lie falls to pieces when you recognize that prison guards are the violent people in the prison system. They are the people that maintain the day-to-day violence of the prison system. So Esra Arakan was raped by a prison guard because the prison guard had particular access to Esra, and because Esra was out of the general population of the prison. This meant Esra had less potential for safety, less witnesses, and this made Esra particularly vulnerable to violence from the prison guards. Ultimately, when Esra decided to proceed with a legal case against the prison guard that raped her, the state found in support of the prison guard, and rather than the guard facing consequences, Esra was moved to another prison. Esra explains that the logic behind that decision is that someone like Esra cannot be trusted because of Esra's identity as a trans woman, as a woman, and as a former sex worker. For these reasons, Esra cannot be believed to be a credible person. Therefore, violence done against people like Esra is not something the prison system takes particularly seriously, because this person's life is already devalued. Through testimonies like Esra's and others, we can see how the unique position of trans and non-binary prisoners as prisoners who are put into solitary confinement allows the prison system to do violence against trans and non-binary bodies under the opportunist pretext of safeguarding them from violence by other prisoners, while, in reality, the state does this violence itself.
This is really important. Although she has been through a really traumatic experience, she was a survivor. She tried to do something against the person who caused all this. But again, that guard didn't have any punishment, but she was transferred to another prison. So this is also like another fragment, another layer of punishment. If you complain about your situation, you will be transferred. And being transferred for a prisoner, this is really bad, because you will know nobody, because you will have no friends, and you're trans and you're in a men's prison. And then when she was transferred to a prison in Eskişehir, this principal of the prison, he was a friend of the rapist. So they were like accomplices. They were friends and they were working as a team to make the pressure on Esra stronger. So their solidarity was also there. Male oppression was building itself over and over again. But Esra was so powerful that she insisted on this case, and at least she did something that could help others to speak up, that could help others to act on it. This is really hopeful. This is something nice for prisoners, I think, I believe. She was in men's prison for 13 years, and 2 years ago, she has been transferred to women's prison. And what she told us, that she has been feeling much better since then. Even the gender identity, like assigned gender identity of guards, make her feel better because she is around women. And I don't know, she says she feels better. And she has been making some friends inside a women's prison. I think she generally feels safer around women. So she has been making some friends. She sounds basically positive, and there is a chance of her getting released in 5 to 6 years. We are not pretty sure about the date yet, but this is some positive news, because we are also excited to help her build a new life outside prison. people, like, if they're watching this movie, if they're hearing my voice right now, probably they know somebody from Esra Arıkan Solidarity Network, or they can reach someone from Esra Arıkan Solidarity Network. So they can get in touch with that network and they can learn what they can do. They can translate letters. We have many zines about Esra. We translated her interviews with anarchist newspapers. They can join the chain of translating, or they can basically spread her words. They can organize events. They can write to Esra. I don't know, there are thousands of things. Like, it depends on what they would like to put some effort on.
For people who want to support trans, non-binary and gender non-conforming prisoners, you can reach out to us, but also you can reach out to those prisoners where you are and make direct connections. As we've heard, the prison is designed to enforce a gender binary, so to be in solidarity with queer people, we have to be prison abolitionists. Therefore, whether you're directly writing to queer prisoners or working to dismantle prisons generally, that is solidarity with queer people. Be gay, do crime.
Mehr vom Bündnis gibt's auf ihrer Facebook-Seite Freedom for Esra. Wir sind das Antirepressionsradio und das war unsere heutige Sendung. Nachhören könnt ihr unsere Sendungen auf freieradios.net und weitere Infos gibt's auf antirepressionsradio.noblogs.org.
Whose bodies? Our bodies. Whose rights? Our rights. Cuerpo de quienes? De nosotras. Derechos de quienes? De nosotras. Decisiones de quienes? De nosotras. Cruda Cubensi, one more time, representing women and queer people. Choices. KRUDA, yes.
Mi cuerpo es mío, mi cuerpo es mío. Ya tú... Espetxe irrati feminista. Astelenero, 7:00.
Dein feministisches Knastradio. Am Montag um 19 Uhr.
Sis, Feministlerin, Hüfsack Radio Show.